This is...
Well, here we are.
Felger.
What?
And Mass.
The whole team suck.
Felger and Mass.
Maybe your part in the back is a little bit loose.
98.5. The Sports Hub.
3-2. Line drive. Oh, play by Kinsler. A diving effort. Up the middle, Brock Holt.
Oh, my goodness.
I should say Kinsler with it. Oh, God. How did he make that play? Kinsler up the middle to snag it and fire. And look at the look on Pierce's face.
That is ridiculous.
All around game, that's what he's here for. Great at bat, we made a third and less than two outs. Defensively, you saw what happened. Running the bases, you know, he took off right away. He's a good player. Start looking at Ian's career. It's a good one. It's a good one.
Tony, it was like a highlight reel for every guy on that team last night. Really, every one of them. What did Betts have? Four hits. JD Martinez hitting balls to the gap. Ian Kinsler's running around on the diamond like Robbie Alomar, for crying out loud. There was one big party for the Red Sox last night at Fenway Park. 617-779-0985. Chris Gasper of the Globe now joins us. Before we get to him, let me just remind you, Agenda Free Friday is brought to you by Planet Fitness. The world judges, they don't. PlanetFitness.com. So our thanks to Planet Fitness for being sponsors of Agenda Free Friday. Chris, how's it going?
Going well. What's up? How you guys doing?
Good. So before I just said going into the break that there was one thing in particular that struck me about the Red Sox last night that was really striking to me. And it was the nature of the game. It's been there all year long, but the nature of the game really highlighted. But before we get to that, your thoughts sort of on that game last night and what is at stake potentially here for the Red Sox and the Yankees this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Red Sox have a real opportunity to sort of put the Yankees away here. In this series, the way that things are going, the Yankees have problems, obviously, with their starting pitching. You know, it's funny, we talk about the trade deadline and moves you make, moves you don't make. Last year, Brian Cashman was lauded for acquiring Sonny Gray, who was one of the best pitchers available. And now this year, he's been a disaster for the Yankees. If he were doing anything remotely what he should be doing, I think they'd be in a better position. They certainly wouldn't be in a position where they're going to have to bring up this kid Adams from AAA to make the start tomorrow.
Chance Adams?
Chance Adams, yes. Chance Adams and Justice Sheffield are two of their best pitching prospects. But you know who I thought came out a winner last night was Dombrowski?
No question.
Ian Kinsler makes two great defensive plays and has three hits. Pierce obviously had the game he had. That goes without saying. Then Zach Britton gets in the game, and you know, he wasn't charged with an earned run, but he allowed a run to cross the plate. So Dombrowski ends up looking pretty good. But my overall look at the Red Sox from this whole week, Maz, not just the Yankees, but going back to the trade deadline, because I've been out of the mix for a little bit here, I think that Dombrowski has put Alex Cora in a tough situation in the postseason because they don't have that defined bullpen, because they don't have that guy that you know you're going to in the eighth inning. It opens it up for a rookie manager to have to mix and match and figure it out. And that opens it up for a lot of second guessing of the manager if it doesn't work out and if they can't hold leads in October.
I mean, there's pressure there, right? There's pressure to make the right decision.
There was no pressure last night.
No.
At least not after the fourth inning.
No, that's right. I mean, you go to the right guy in the right situation. And look, Paul Perillo of Patriots Football Weekly is here as well. He's filling in today to co-host. Matt McCarthy's here to give us headlines. So I want to get to the Patriots with you two guys too, which we'll do here during the hour. But I'll tell you what stuck out to me in that game last night. And with the lineup they had on the field, right? You know, Kinsler's two plays. The first one was a little dressed up. Okay, yeah.
You saying that was a little eyewash, man?
Yeah, it was a little bit of a flop dive there. I mean, it was a good play, but it wasn't a great play.
He gave it the full Jim Edmonds on that one?
Totally.
He spent 2+ hours saying how good the Red Sox were last night. He couldn't handle it. He got a little, I got to get back on that.
I did. It was getting a little squeamish. But then beyond that, I would tell you, the other play he made on the bouncer up the middle, ridiculous. Ridiculous. And let me tell you that there is no other second baseman the Red Sox have put on the field this season, including Dusty Tousax, the little leader himself, Pedroia, who would have made that. Pedroia doesn't make that play. He can't get to that ball anymore. That ball that Kinsler got to last night.
It was a great play.
Okay, so
great,
he was
great play.
He was on the shortstop side of second base, for crying out loud. It was ridiculous, that play. And I want to see Kinsler's defense, if that's what it's going to be on a regular basis, then the trade's worth it. I think Kinsler sucks offensively, but that's another story. But that defensive play was worth it. Okay, now, between him and Holt, who was on the field, Nunez was at third, Benintendi, Bradley, Betts, Swihart behind the plate. The only two guys on the field that stuck out for them or in the lineup, JD Martinez and Pierce. The only unathletic guys on the field. All the other players they had out there, athletes and ball players. Not one or the other. Every one of them, athletic. They can run. They can steal bases. They can throw. I mean, it struck me last night, and I don't know if you guys came to the same realization or not. Man, they get some good athletes on this team, and I can't remember the last time I said that about the Red Sox.
Well, for the outfield, I mean, we've been saying it for a while.
So again, except for you. So it struck me more last night because of Kinsler's athleticism, I guess, on that play.
Yeah, and also what happened on the bases. I thought, I mean, that turned the game. They totally unnerved Holder on the bases, and you know we're not used to the go Red Sox. Do you realize the Red Sox lead the majors in stolen bases?
Stolen base percentage too.
Yeah, I mean, when is the last time that happened? When is the last time they led the majors in stolen bases first season?
I mean, to me, the big thing is the percentage, Chris. Because I think steals are overrated.
Yeah, I know. You're a speedist.
But that Eduardo Nunez steal the other night in the Phillies game that they won in extra innings, if he doesn't get to second base, the ground rule double doesn't score the winning run. Now you get second and third. That was a big steal. So I just think they're picking their spots well. And you heard Cora say this during the game last night. And I want to get back to the call, so just sit tight for a second. I do wonder about it. Cora said that Ron Renicki is as good as any guy he's ever been around at picking up little tip-offs in an opposing pitcher's move to first base. And the Red Sox have done this more than once this year, if you remember, where they take off.
Yep.
And they did it to Baltimore early in the year where Showalter was completely thrown for a loop. I can't remember who was on the mound for the Orioles. Kevin Gausman, maybe? He's gone now, but whoever it was, they ran on him. As soon as he started to move, he didn't throw to first base. It was embarrassing. So they've done it more than once now where they identified, they're identifying some sort of tell in the pitcher's motion, and they are abusing who's ever on that mound. If that had happened to the Red Sox last night, oh my God, would I be killing them today for being embarrassed by opposing base stealers. The Yankees should be embarrassed. They got completely embarrassed last night. Good God. All right, I get it off my chest.
You can't even do it with a full, like, it's just half-hearted.
Joe is in
Brock. He's making fun of the Yankees. He can't just fully jump in.
Boone did look bad, though.
Oh,
sorry
dude,
about your Yankees mess.
Awful.
Joe's in Brockton. Joe, go.
Hey, I had a comment and I guess a question. As far as the everyone's always complaining, the bullpen. Dombrowski didn't do anything on the bullpen. Didn't pick anyone up. I mean, what happened last night with the bullpens? I mean, the Yankees had to use up almost their entire, you know, bullpen last night to get through the game. And don't you think, too, that the Yankees kind of have to hope for a split to hope for a split now? Because the Red Sox could bury them in the division if the Red Sox win the next two or possibly even the next three and possibly force the Yankees to fight for that for the wild card spot as well.
Okay, so, Joe, don't go too far with it, though. Like, the division and the wild card thing is in play this weekend. It is. The Red Sox come out of this with a 7.5 game lead. Fine. In the postseason, Chris, whose bullpen do you want, the Red Sox or the Yankees?
The Yankees. And he said they used their whole bullpen, really. I didn't see Chapman. I didn't see Robertson.
Right.
I didn't see Betances.
It wasn't a bullpen game last night. Holder was the bullpen last night, and he gave up 117 runs in the fourth inning.
I mean, I saw their long guys. I saw Britton throw two-thirds of an inning, but I didn't see. I mean, they didn't put those guys out. So they didn't use their whole bullpen. I mean, they could go out there tonight and go 7, 8, 9, you know, Robertson, Betances, Chapman. So they're fine there. I also think it's just the bullpen thing for me. I just look at it and feel like they're basically saying to Cora, you have to figure this out the same way that AJ Hinch did last year with the Astros. And I think that's the model if you're the Red Sox. You say, okay, well, the Astros didn't really have this thing defined and they were able to figure it out. I think that puts a lot of pressure on the manager, though, and opens him up to being second-guessed. And the reality is, I'm going to have questions about this bullpen, guys, until we get into the postseason, because I've seen this movie before. You know, we've seen Matt Barnes pitch really well in the regular season before. And then he wasn't even on the playoff roster last year. So it's just a little... And I also think... I looked this up the other day, and I don't know if it's changed, but since there have been six times this year where Kimbrel has entered a game in the eighth inning, and four of them had happened since June 27th. So you tell me whether they trust. And the other night, when Barnes gets the first two outs of the eighth, and they end up going to Kimbrel, I think that was against... who was that against?
Philadelphia.
Okay.
Phillies, yeah.
So doesn't that tell you something about how they feel about their eighth inning and whether they have a clear-cut setup guy?
Of course. And the other thing is, and I'll say this quickly to both of you, the fact that the Astros did it the way they did it last year, is that the model you want to follow?
Well, that's what I don't like about sports in general, but baseball in particular. When something works, that's the new model, no matter what. You know, like the Royals sort of had, you know, the power arms and the bullpen. Oh, starting pitching doesn't matter anymore. And then, you know, the Astros had a good enough rotation, but, oh, you know, no, you just put a good starter in the bullpen, and that's the way you do it now. Like, there's a lot of different ways to win. Like, why does everything have to be the blueprint, you know, the one way to do it or the next way to do it?
Well, and I would just say, Paul, the Astros were the exception.
Yeah.
So the other
absolutely.
Team, the other teams that have won in October, almost all of them have good closers. Like, when I say, I don't mean the guy who pitches the ninth. I mean, they have a bullpen that can close out a win. Okay, teams that give up games late don't win the World Series. They don't. You got to win the games you're supposed to win. And in October, it's harder because you're playing in hostile environments, on the road, pressure situations, and throwing strikes gets that much more difficult, particularly quality strikes. It gets really hard. Barnes can't do it. Kelly can't do it or hasn't shown the ability to do it. Now, can Thornburg? I don't know. But all of a sudden to say that, well, the Astros did it this way, so that means that everybody can do it that way? The other thing is the Astros had a killer lineup. Killer lineup.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. The Red Sox lineup's good. I'm not sure it's Houston good.
You know, and maybe a guy like Eovaldi will come out and he'll do like the Charlie Morton role from last year when Morton was outstanding
sure.
in game seven. That could happen. I mean, he's got that kind of a power arm, and I'm sure, you know, I know he doesn't have a lot of bullpen experience, but he certainly has the stuff to do that. And maybe we'll be sitting there and saying, well, you know, that's what they had in mind, and that's the way it worked out. But is that something you want to rely on before it happens?
No.
Like this is our plan?
No,
it's tough. I mean, I think that puts the pressure on the manager to push the right buttons. And if it doesn't work out, suddenly everybody's saying, well, why didn't you go to this guy? Why didn't you go to that guy? Why'd you choose this guy in that situation? I mean, to me, he really sort of passed the buck and put the whole thing in Coors' lap in terms of the playoffs and managing the bullpen if they don't add. And, you know, he pretty much said that he doesn't think that they're, that this, he has said that in interviews that this is, he thinks this is the team that they have and that they're not going to add anything before the August 31st deadline.
I mean, I hate to remind everybody, but in 03, their bullpen finally came together and their manager cracked because he couldn't handle it. And he didn't make the right choice and he went with the wrong guy at the wrong time and it may have cost him a World Series.
Yeah, we don't have to go back to that, but there were a lot of other things at play that people conveniently forget, like Scott Williamson pooping himself in Game 5 of the Oakland Series.
Okay, so Gasper
Derek
in
Lowe
studio.
Having to come into a bases-loaded situation to get him out of it.
Paul Perillo in studio. Matt McCarthy's here to give his headlines. We'll get to the Patriots next.
The Sports Hub. Miss something?
Come back and put it in my face.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now back to Felger and Mass.
They suck.
On Boston's home for sports.
All right, welcome back to Agenda Free Friday. Chris Gasper of the Globe in studio, as he is every Friday at 4 p.m. Paul Perillo is co-hosting today. Paul Perillo, Patriots Football Weekly. How's everything going down there, Paul? Good? On the good ship, Lollipop, pretty good?
It's going all right.
There you go. Matt McCarthy here to give us headlines. He'll be with me through the baseball reporters later on. Matt's a big baseball guy, so we'll get into some hardcore Red Sox with him later in the day, too. But the happenings down in Foxborough. Tom Brady, the one that stuck out to me more than anything, and this obviously goes back to the first week of camp, Chris. Everybody shows up amid the stories and the speculation about the relationships and the inner turmoil, if that's what you want to call it, or the infighting down in Foxborough, all of these things. And Ben Volen of the Globe then asked Brady about Alex Guerrero, and Brady flips out and walks away. Okay? Flips out and walks away. What did you make of that whole scene?
Yeah, I thought that the question was totally legitimate, and I was surprised that Tom reacted that way, and I thought it was a real opportunity, you know, for him to come out and defend his guy, and I think, again, the way he handled it was not the way that I think he should have handled it or the way that I would have handled it, and the reason the question was legitimate was because the day before, I was down there, and I had asked Belichick basically the same question about Guerrero, you know, that in light of Edelman suspensions, do you have any concerns about, you know, players receiving training or treatment from Guerrero? And Bill had answered it. He in no way implicated or impugned Guerrero in his answer, but he just answered the question. And so Volin was there that day. In fact, he was right beside me. So Bill's already on the record on this. He's responded to it. So you asked Tom about it. It was not, you know, I know Tom said that's ridiculous, and I wasn't sure if he was referring to Volin's question or the idea of their of people feeling like there's sort of this connection between Guerrero and Edelman's suspension. But again, I think he had a real opportunity there to just coolly, calmly defend his guy, and instead it looks worse because he flipped out over it.
Go ahead, Paul.
No, I would look at it the same way. I didn't feel like there was anything wrong with the question. I know a lot of people fixated on the wording, the specific phrase that he used about, you know, people have, and that's not one of my favorite phrases, but in this particular case, I didn't find anything really out of bounds the way he asked the question. I wonder if it maybe had something to do with the Globe, frankly, Chris, you know, your employer, and some of the, you know, bad blood that may be festering between Brady and the Globe itself. But
and this goes back to the Bob Holler story and the Brady Charitable Foundation.
I mean, I've heard, you know, not directly, obviously, from Tom or anything, but yeah, I know that there are people who are bothered by that story around Tom.
I just didn't feel like there was anything out of bounds about the question itself. I didn't think it was a cheap shot. And I agree with the way Chris put it. I thought it was a pretty easy way, pretty easy opportunity for Tom to sort of defend Alex the way he has at length many times in the past couple of years.
I thought Brady acted like a three-year-old. And you know, I know that irritates, like, apparently Reds, Patriots fans, but I look at it and say, you've got to be kidding me. So on the one hand, Tom Brady's relationship with Alex Guerrero is very public and very profitable. Then another guy who uses Guerrero, at least in some capacity, maybe not quite as committed to Guerrero as Tom is, gets popped for PEDs, and it's not in bounds to ask that question?
Right.
Of course it's in bounds.
Well, I've talked about this on this show. I mean, I feel like whoever leaked it wanted that question to be asked. Like, that was kind of the whole point of leaking Edelman's suspension, right? I mean, so if you're mad at anybody, shouldn't you be mad at whoever, you know, potentially in your organization leaked this? If you're Tom, wouldn't you want to address that first?
So the other thing, Chris, is, and I mentioned this, and forgive me if you guys haven't heard this, I'm going to have to paraphrase it for you. But on Sunday night, I was on Sports Final with Steve Burton, and Mike Reese was there. And Burton asked Reese about it. And Reese said that, well, he thinks part of the reason Brady got agitated is because the only people that have connected Edelman to Guerrero and the, you know, the PEDs to Guerrero is a better way to put it. The only people that have connected that are media people who are talking about it. So that if Brady addresses it, it is then giving credence to the stories. Now, I agree. I disagree with Mike Reese on this.
Totally. Okay?
Because for this reason, Guerrero issued a statement the day we found out about it. Guerrero issued a statement to say, don't, you know, immediately people are linking, want to link Edelman to me. And let me just say up front that we run a clean operation here. Guerrero did it. So if Guerrero can do it, why can't Brady talk about it?
No, I mean, I think that's a fair point. I understand Tom's frustration because I share his viewpoint that it is unfair to automatically sort of assume that this has something to do with Guerrero. I said that to you and Mike the day it came out because I felt like Mike fell exactly into the trap of whoever leaked this thing, what they wanted it to become, which was a referendum on Guerrero. And we've talked about this before. Who does Guerrero looking bad? Who does that benefit in Foxborough?
Bill Belichick.
Yes. Correct.
So you think that leak came from the Belichick camp?
I think somebody close to Bill had knowledge of that information and tipped somebody off.
Okay, and this whole
at least in the direction of where to look.
Okay, because look at this whole thing, Bill versus Tom, is really Bill's camp versus Tom's camp.
And the reality is, look, it was a great disservice to Edelman because no one's supposed to know about that until the appeal goes through. Now, his appeal ended up getting denied, but that it's a violation of the CBA. It's a violation of his privacy. It's not supposed to come out that he tested positive until he's gone through the process in terms of litigating it. And if they denied the appeal then, I mean, the NFL hadn't announced anything. So who knew at that point and could, you know, was in a position to leak that thing?
How do you guys feel about the way that Edelman handled the questions about Guerrero?
I thought he did okay. I mean, I don't think he completely dismissed all the questions. I thought he answered them. I thought he got a little repetitive, but he did take some responsibilities and talked about needing to, you know, do a better job with the protocols and whatnot. I think that's a hard situation because you know how these guys are. I mean, they're not going to come out and say, well, this is what I, you know, A, B, and C. But, you know, in his defense, he didn't go with, like, you know, the Adderall thing or, yeah. you know, there's a lot of other things that the players sort of fall back on. And he didn't fall back on that roster of it wasn't really my fault. Bad supplement, this, that, you know, I think he just sort of fell on the sword.
I just want to say this, too, and the reason I think that that I see where Tom's coming from, even though I don't like the way he expressed the fact he thinks it's not fair to connect it, even though, but I do agree, is, look, one way everybody looked at it was, okay, here's an Alex Guerrero client. I guess you can look at it that way with Edelman. The other way that's much more common is aging Patriots player coming off injury, pop for PEDs, Rodney Harrison, Rob Ninkovich, Julian Edelman. Like, it's happened before. You know, what, he's been working with Guerrero for a while, not as much as he used to. All that time, he didn't get popped for PEDs. What's the thing that changed? He's coming off a torn ACL, and he's going to be 33 years old. I mean, that's kind of the way the NFL works.
So at one point in his little presser, and I say little presser, when he spoke to the media about it, Edelman said, I love Alex. Right? I love Alex. But don't you find it odd that neither one of them was more, you know, demonstrative in speaking in defense of Alex Guerrero? Like, didn't you expect them to say, hey, look, if you know what this guy does over there, he's doing everything by the book. We do everything by the book. We, you know, it's
he a runs fair point.
Like, a fair point. I just expected something stronger. I expected something stronger in defense of Guerrero. And it felt to me like that wasn't there, particularly from Brady.
Well, he didn't address it at all. I mean, I think that was the way he approached it. I wouldn't take that as a non-defensive. I think he missed an opportunity to do what you're saying, Maz. But I think his response to it was, you know, this is absurd. I don't even want to give this any credence. And again, I disagree with the way he responded to it because I think he missed an opportunity to say what you're saying in a cool, calm way. The way he's been basically his whole career, to just very coolly and calmly lay out the case in defense of his guy. And this guy's not just... By the way, doing that doesn't just help Alex Guerrero. It helps Tom Brady because it's not just his body coach. This is his business partner.
Correct.
This is a brand he's building. So if somehow Guerrero becomes besmirched, that not only affects him in terms of, okay, this is your trainer, but it's like that could damage the brand you're building. Here's an easy opportunity, a layup opportunity to go out and do some positive PR. And instead, you sort of turn it into a thing where you storm off.
I just think it was a bad look, really. So... Matt McCarthy's got your headlines. We'll get back to your calls. I know a number you still want to talk about that Red Sox win last night, which we will get to. And Chris, I know, has some very strong thoughts, or particular thoughts, about the Patriots wide receiving core. We'll get to that when we come back.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Every afternoon, Felger and Mass bring you the science of sports.
Stupid me.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
So maybe the first really interesting transaction at Patriots training camp took place a couple of days ago. Jordan Matthews was released. I think a lot of people thought Jordan Matthews was going to be a significant contributor to the Patriots this year. Chris Gasper is raising his hand for those of you, which is most of you listening on radio. On the simulcast, you can see him. But Matthews went out. The Patriots have since signed Eric Decker, but obviously Edelman is going to miss the first four games of the year in the suspension. Malcolm Mitchell is hurt. Kenny Britt has been hurt, although he was in pads today and on the field, right?
Briefly.
Briefly, right?
But didn't participate, right?
Yeah, and the pads came off and he went in.
Okay, so really you go right across the board, and it does feel like it's a wide receiving core that doesn't exactly inspire the most confidence in the fan base.
Right.
So how do you feel about the wide receiving core at the moment, Chris?
I think it's thin. And I think at least for those first four games when Brady starts the year throwing to those guys, I think it's probably the least accomplished, least reliable receiving core he's had since 2013 when they mixed the three rookies in. It was Aaron Dobson, Kenbrell Tompkins, and Josh Boyce. And that was also Amendola's first year, and he wasn't really Amendola. He certainly wasn't Danny Playoff Amendola when he got targeted one time in the AFC Championship game. So it was a little bit different. And I remember that year losing that game, I'm sure Paul does too, in Denver, going up against Peyton Manning, and it's like, okay, they sent Brady into a gunfight with the squirt gun. You know, they're throwing passes to, no disrespect, I love the guy, he's a special teams, he's great, but they're throwing passes to Matthew Slater and Matthew Mulligan and Austin Colley. You're like, what? This is what we're dealing with here?
That's right, Austin Colley. I was going to say Blair White, but
it was Austin Colley.
That's the difference? That's the guy that gets, you know, Edelman was playing in that game too, but, you know, people conveniently forget that.
That's true. He did play in that game, and he missed him. Brady missed him on the, you know, down the sideline, wide open. But I just feel like this wide receiving core is not accomplished. And I also go back to this, guys, because there's a lot of people. I did not think that Brandon Cooks deserved the amount of criticism he got last year. I thought he was actually pretty productive. However, based on what happened in training camp, I thought he would look more comfortable in the offense and be able to be a number one wide receiver in the offense. He was not able to do that last year. And at this time last year, he was drawing all this praise for what he was doing in training camp.
Oh, yeah.
The same sort of praise that's being drawn by one Philip Dorsett. So I'm not necessarily sure you can say, well, geez, you know, Dorsett looks great in training camp and he's in the Brady circle of trust now and he's getting these reps off to the side and it's just magically going to work when the lights come on.
Chris just ruined my whole summer.
Well, so now
I'm on board with Dorsett and everything you just said is accurate because that's what Cooks did last year. He dominated. Cooks dominated. Now, Dorsett hasn't dominated like Cooks did last year, so you just wrecked my whole day.
Sorry, Paulie.
Greg Bedard was here yesterday, and he was talking about Dorsett, too, and I'm wondering, like, he and Perillo should just go to the Dunkin' drive-thru and have a Philip Dorsett munchkin.
Right, that's twice. I mean, can you come up with a different one? I mean, seriously. Vary your material.
I'm just saying. I'm not holding my breath on Philip Dorsett. The difference now between now and, say, 2013 or even, you know, Bedard mentioned 2006 yesterday.
Oh, it's not nearly as bad as 06. I purposely didn't mention 06.
Okay, so he does still have Gronk.
Yeah.
He has Hogan. He's got James White.
In terms of everybody, this is much better than those other alternatives. I think Chris was talking specifically wide receivers. And I think off air you mentioned, I don't think you ever actually gave the big hit.
Oh,
if it stays the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, if it stays the way... Thanks, Paul, for reminding me. Thank you. If it stays the way it is, in terms of Malcolm Mitchell not being able to come back for the start of the season, and obviously you're not going to have Edelman, then by my count, Brady will start the year with one wide receiver who's caught a touchdown pass from him.
And that's Hogan.
That's Hogan.
Yeah, and that's Hogan. So is this something that, you know, does Brady have a right to be irritated about this? Or because of Gronk, because of James White... You know, because of Hogan, Brady looks at it and says, no, we'll be all right. We get the horses we need.
I think the backs are a big part of that, and I think that they are a much bigger part of the passing game in general than they were, say, in 06. You know, I mean, even though those running backs themselves didn't really have all that experience, but the offense is so much different. How much more do they utilize the backs now than they did 10, 12 years ago? So, and there's no comparison for Gronk. But here's the thing. When you have so much sort of centered on him, isn't that always a dangerous way to live, because he's so injury prone and he played the majority of the year last year. He's been healthy, you know, last year he was healthy. Two of the last three or three of the last four he's generally been pretty healthy. It kind of feels like you're rolling the dice there with him because he's just so physical and he takes such a beating. It's been a pretty quiet camp for him so far. You know, maybe they're trying to keep him as fresh as possible. But one thing that I worry about with Edelman being out that first month, logic would dictate you're going to lean a little bit more heavily on him. And everybody sort of...
On Gronk.
Yeah. And everybody sort of rightly says, well, maybe this wouldn't be a terrible thing for Edelman. You know, he has to miss four games, gives him some extra time to recover from the ACL. He'll be fresher in the playoffs. I think that's a logical way of looking at it. But at the same time, the opposite is true with Gronk. You want to keep him fresh. I think there were times last year they purposely didn't go to him as often as they might. You know, he would go a whole half and get like one target. Then they would need him in a close game in the second half and they'd lead on him. They did it in the Super Bowl. He was dominant in the second half of the Super Bowl. Well, I don't know if you can get away with sort of staying away from Gronk in the first month of the season, and maybe he's not as fresh as a result because you had to rely on him a little bit more.
It's hard to keep both of those guys healthy.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the other thing. You know, Edelman, the extra time hopefully benefits him, guys. But the other part of it is I remember Wes Welker coming back after his torn ACL, and the timing certainly was different, but he wasn't the same guy. I mean, he averaged under 10 yards a catch. So we're all assuming Julian will come back and just be Julian Edelman as we know him. It might take a little while.
Yeah, it was Welker's worst year as a Patriot, right?
It was, yeah.
I want to say he had 86 catches.
But it was 9.8 or 9.9 yards a catch.
It might even have been less than that.
Yeah, he had less time to recover than Edelman did, though, right?
He did.
Yeah,
no, there's no question.
He got hurt in the last game of the year.
Yeah. Joe's in Everett. Joe, go ahead.
Joe from Everett, you got me?
Yep, go.
Okay. I have a question for Paul. On the pup list, Paul.
Yes.
Isn't there a certain date when people are on that, that they can't play, you know, the part of the regular season?
Yeah, with PUP, first, the real quick, the
what's,
first,
what's the quick
the first
PUP
part
rule?
Is you have to open training camp on active PUP in order to be eligible to be put on PUP to start the season. Now, in order, if you go all the way to the end of the training camp and when that final cutdown day, which is September 30th.
Then you can't play the first 6 weeks.
Right. If you're on PUP to start the season, then you're automatically out the first 6 weeks.
But you can come off PUP at any time.
If you start training camp on PUP, so basically I think it's going to be Nate Ebner, Cyrus Jones, Jonathan Jones, and I don't know what the status of Kenny Britt is right now, depending on how they viewed today if he's off PUP. Those four guys could come off PUP anytime between now and the start of the season and be eligible to play in the season. If they open the season and they get moved from active PUP to reserve PUP, they're out for at least 6 weeks.
Okay, so there you go. That's a quick PUP rule, courtesy of Paul Perillo. Does everybody get that now? We good on that?
You'll still screw it up.
No. It's compelling radio, Paul. What do you want me to tell you?
Can we go back to talking Brandon Lyon?
Yeah, 617-779-0985. We'll wrap it up with Gasper when we come back.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Are you concerned about this thing unraveling this weekend against as good an offensive team as this is, especially in their park?
No, we got Seve going tomorrow. Can't wait to hand him the ball and look to get him rolling. This is a long, arduous season. You know, you're going to hit these little bumps in the road where it's difficult, where, you know, you have where you're trying to preserve pitching a little bit, where you're up against it a little bit and a lot of days in a row. We give the ball to one of the best in the game tomorrow in Seve. He goes out and does his thing. We're right back reset and good to go.
Boone, manager of the Yankees. I can't decide whether that guy's a genius or a moron. I can't decide which. Maybe Derek in Foxborough can help me get to the bottom of this. Derek, what do you think of Aaron Boone?
Oh, he sucks. I mean, he used Sabathia. He should have stayed with Sabathia. He left that Holder kid in way too long. I mean, it was obvious after two batters that kid couldn't get anybody out. And then he used Britton for no reason. And, Matt, I know you're rooting for the Yankees in this, but I don't see how you can have any confidence with Aaron Boone as their manager.
Yeah, so, Derek, I'm not rooting for the Yankees. I mean, I know you think I am. I'm just not waving my pom-poms around for the Red Sox because this is what we do. When you do a show, when you talk about a team, you try to analyze the positives and the negatives, mostly the negatives.
Did you see how he slipped in there for our team to you? Did you hear him say that?
No, for our team. I'll tell you, though, I think his concerns about Boone are legit.
Oh, totally.
I mean, so I hear Boone's comment, and oh, yeah, no problem. Bumps in the road, you know. And I think
to Matt's point, yeah, there's no urgency. There's no accountability.
So they do. They have an accountability problem. You know what that team could use right now? Joe Girardi.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the reason these young guys didn't like Joe Girardi is because Girardi climbed up their backside when they started to lose focus.
Because he made them run to first base.
This is why Gary Sanchez and Girardi did not get along.
Right.
Because Girardi looked at Sanchez and said, you're a lazy SOB. You're not getting the most out of your ability. Get your head in the game. And overall, Girardi got that team to perform to its capability. And then beyond it, really.
Above it for like five straight years, to be totally honest.
I mean, so now all of a sudden they've gone in a different direction. And the Yankees have. If you're going to say the one thing the Red Sox really have done, this, as much grief as I give the Red Sox for not beating winning teams. Okay, and now they're 500 against teams that are playoff teams. The one thing we can say without any hesitation is that the Red Sox have kept their eye on the ball and played every series and played every game like you're supposed to, and the Yankees have not. I mean, it's not even close.
No, you're right. Yeah, and you see that. And so one thing is the focus, the attention to detail, the motivation, but the fundamentals seem to be lacking too. I mean, when that comebacker went to Holder,
yeah.
It's like, what are you doing? Run at the runner. And then Andujar looked like he had, what's he doing running towards, I think Eckersley said, like, and Remy both said, what is he doing running towards home plate, making that a much tougher throw? And then, you know, the situation where Holder's just standing there and a base is being stolen. He has no idea, like, what's going on. I mean, did that look like a team that had gone over the fundamentals, was finely tuned, and had attention to detail? Didn't look that way to me. And I also think the caller was right about, it seemed to me he was caught off guard when things started to spin out of control for Holder. It was like, he's like, oh my God, Larry Rothschild, you got to go out there and buy me some time to get somebody up. I mean, he just, I have not been impressed. And it wasn't just last night. I've not been impressed with what I've seen from him. He just seems to be one of those guys who's just there. He doesn't seem to have, and I think the whole, you know me, Maz, I've told you, I think the whole managing in baseball thing is overrated to begin with, at least when it comes to the X's and O's of it, so to speak. But it just doesn't seem like he adds anything, whether it's motivation, whether it's strategy, whether it's making sure guys are drilled in the fundamentals. He just seems to be there because he's really good at talking to the media.
I mean, I think that's right. And I think that overall, he's got a very sort of easygoing personality. All the players are comfortable, which with this Yankee team, I think could be a flaw. I mean, a fatal flaw. And at the moment, remember, they don't have the talent that they usually do. No Sanchez, no Judge. So any fundamental breakdowns, any bad managerial decisions are going to explode times 10. Taking Sabathia out of that game last night and then leaving Holder in for as long as he did, I mean, that turned the game. It did. It completely turned the game. Tom's in Arizona. Tom, quickly.
Hey, Maz, great in the AL chair, but I think you lost just a tiny bit of the negativity because I haven't heard you bring up the fact that the Sox pitching last night gave up 7 freaking runs.
Wasn't good.
How many games are they going to win giving up 7 runs? I mean, never mind the rest of the season, but just the next 3 games, if they give up 7 runs, how many of those games are they going to win?
Yeah, so Tom, listen, you're not going to
probably win Saturday. You got a guy making his major league debut. You're holding a 7, you'll probably win that game.
Okay, but his overall point's a dangerous way to live.
Obviously.
Right, it's a dangerous way to live.
But you also had Brian Johnson pitching that game last night. Isn't that a little bit of extenuating circumstance? If Price went out and had another real rough outing, and we'll see what happens Sunday, but that would be much more cause for concern to me than Brian Johnson giving up a 3-run dong to Didi Gregorius in the first inning.
Well, so look, this happens. And maybe there's a lesson in there too in terms of the managers. Johnson got off to a rough start, and you know what Cora did? He stuck with him. He hung in there, and Johnson ended up getting through 5 innings. And as a result, now, you know, you can skip over maybe the really bad parts of your bullpen. Meanwhile, Aaron Boone has Sabathia on the mound, who's laboring, but still has only given up at that point. Was it 1 run or 2?
1.
I think it was 1.
Yeah.
1 run to that point in the game. Yeah, it might have been 2.
I think
when
it was 2
him.
When he came out.
Yeah.
But that's my point. Like, Johnson didn't pitch better than Sabathia.
Well, he did have 11 strikeouts.
But he gave up 4 runs in 5 innings.
Yeah, he had problems with the home run ball.
Sabathia gave up 2 and 3, whatever it was. So just let him hang in there and get through 5. You let him throw 2 more innings. And now it's a bullpen game. You think you have the better bullpen, right? So what do you think the chances were better that Sabathia was going to give up 2 or 3 more runs and get you through 5, or that Holder was going to hold the lead to get to you?
Well, I mean, Holder had
chances
in defense of Boone, and I know
world.
I've ripped him. I mean, Holder had pitched really well. His ERA was like in the 2s going into that game. But I just thought when it started to turn, all of a sudden Boone was just sort of there. You know, like literally looking at Larry Rothschild, the pitcher, like, what do I do now? You know, so it's like, you know, when it turns like that, you have to react. And I felt like he didn't. He was really slow to react, in my opinion.
And go ahead.
No, after you. Okay.
And not to mention, they go away from Sabathia after 77 pitches in the 3rd inning. The bullpen blows up. He has to use his starter for Saturday. Now they're calling up a kid again from the minor leagues. You have even a worse chance to win on Saturday. His decision last night affected them for the entire series by pulling out a veteran pitcher who could have gutted it out for 1 or 2 more innings, a guy who's more than capable of that in Sabathia. It screws him for Saturday now.
Right, after Sonny Gray puked all over himself and they stuck J Happ in the bullpen. Right, so again, he really did. He lost control of his pitching staff there. They get Bambi managing the Bronx Bombers, for crying out loud. Glassy-eyed Bambi standing at the corner of the dugout. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Good to see you guys.
Nice to see you, as always.
It's a great way to end.
Okay, we're in our longest commercial-free block here on Felger and Maz. No commercials. McCarthy's got your headlines, and then we're back for our final hour of Agenda Free Friday with Paul Perillo.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.